Chapter 12. But he could not possibly hunt up such a respectable man just yet. So raw and unpolished was his condition, so precarious were his fortunes. Thus he still remained in loneliness. Although people moved round him, he virtually saw none. Not as yet having mingled with the active life of the place, it was largely non-existent to him. But the saints and prophets in the window tracery, the paintings in the galleries, the statues, the busts, the gargoyles, the corbel heads, he seemed to breathe his atmosphere. Like all newcomers to a spot on which the past is deeply graven, he heard that past announcing itself with an emphasis altogether unsuspected by, and even incredible to, the habitual residents. For many days he haunted the cloisters and quadrangles of the colleges at odd minutes in passing them, surprised by impish echoes of his own footsteps, smart as the blows of a mallet. The Christminster Entiment, as it had been called, ate further and further into him, till he probably knew more about those buildings materially, artistically, and historically, than any one of their inmates. It was not till now, when he found himself actually on the spot of his enthusiasm, that Jude perceived how far away from the object of that enthusiasm he really was. Only a wall divided him from those happy young contemporaries of his with whom he shared a common mental life, men who had nothing to do from morning till night but to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest. Only a wall, but what a wall! Every day, every hour, as he went in search of labor, he saw them going and coming also, rubbed shoulders with them, heard their voices, marked their movements. The conversation of some of the more thoughtful among them seemed oftentimes, owing to his long and persistent preparation for this place, to be peculiarly akin to his own thoughts. Yet he was as far from them as if he had been at the Antipodes. Of course he was. He was a young workman in a white blouse, and with stone dust in the creases of his clothes, and in passing him, they did not even see him, or hear him, rather saw through him, as through a pane of glass, at their familiars beyond. Whatever they were to him, he to them was not on the spot at all, and yet he had fancied he would be close to their lives by coming there. But the future lay ahead after all. And if he could only be so fortunate as to get into good employment, he would put up with the inevitable. So he thanked God for his health and strength, and took courage. For the present he was outside the gates of everything, colleges included. Perhaps someday he would be inside. Those palaces of light and leading, he might someday look down on the world through their panes. At length he did receive a message from the stonemason's yard that a job was waiting for him. It was his first encouragement, and he closed with the offer promptly. He was young and strong, or he never could have executed with such zest the undertakings to which he now applied himself, since they involved reading most of the night, after working all the day. First he bought a shaded lamp for 4 and 6 pence, and obtained a good light. Then he got pens, paper, and such other necessary books as he had been unable to obtain elsewhere. Then, to the consternation of his landlady, he shifted all the furniture of his room, a single one for living and sleeping, rigged up a curtain on a rope across the middle, to make a double chamber out of one, hung up a thick blind, that nobody should know how he was curtailing the hours of sleep, laid out his books, and sat down. Having been deeply encumbered by marrying, getting a cottage, and buying the furniture which had disappeared in the wake of his wife, he had never been able to save any money since the time of those disastrous ventures, and till his wages began to come in he was obliged to live in the narrowest way. After buying a book or two he could not even afford himself a fire. And when the nights reeked with the raw and cold air from the meadows, he sat over his lamp in a great coat, hat, and woolen gloves. From his window he could perceive the spire of the cathedral, and the ogee dome under which resounded the great bell of the city. The tall tower, tall belfry windows, and tall pinnacles of the college by the bridge he could also get a glimpse of by going to the staircase. These objects he used as stimulants, when his faith in the future was dim. Like enthusiasts in general he made, no inquiries into details of procedure. Picking up general notions from casual acquaintance, he never dwelt upon them. For the present, he said to himself, the one thing necessary was to get ready by accumulating money and knowledge, and await whatever chances were afforded to such an one of becoming a son of the university. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is, that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. His desire absorbed him, and left no part of him to weigh its practicability. At this time he received a nervously anxious letter from his poor old aunt, on the subject which had previously distressed her, a fear that Jude would not be strong-minded enough to keep away from his cousin Sue Brighthead and her relations. Sue's father, his aunt believed, had gone back to London, but the girl remained at Christminster. To make her still more objectionable, she was an artist, or designer of some sort in what was called an ecclesiastical warehouse, which was a perfect seedbed of idolatry, and she was no doubt abandoned to mummeries on that account, if not quite a papist. Miss Drusilla Folly was of her date, evangelical. As Jude was rather on an intellectual track than a theological, this news of Sue's probable opinions did not much influence him one way or the other, but the clue to her whereabouts was decidedly interesting. With an altogether singular pleasure he walked at his earliest spare minutes past the shops answering to his great aunt's description, and beheld in one of them a young girl sitting behind a desk, who was suspiciously like the original of the portrait. He ventured to enter on a trivial errand, and having made his purchase lingered on the scene. The shop seemed to be kept entirely by women. It contained Anglican books, stationery, texts, and fancy goods. Little plaster angels on brackets, Gothic framed pictures of saints, ebony crosses that were almost crucifixes, prayer books that were almost missals. He felt very shy of looking at the girl in the desk. She was so pretty that he could not believe it possible that she should belong to him. Then she spoke to one of the two older women behind the counter, and he recognized in the accents certain qualities of his own voice, softened and sweetened, but his own. What was she doing? He stole a glance round. Before her lay a piece of zinc, cut to the shape of a scroll 3 or 4 feet long, and coated with a dead surface paint on one side. Hereon she was designing or illuminating, in characters of church text, the single word, A50, L-E-50, U-J-H, a sweet, saintly, Christian business, hers, thought he. Her presence here was now fairly enough explained, her skill in work of this sort having no doubt been acquired from her father's occupation as an ecclesiastical worker in metal. The lettering on which she was engaged was clearly intended to be fixed up in some chancel to assist devotion. He came out. It would have been easy to speak to her there and then, but it seemed scarcely honorable towards his aunt to disregard her request so incontinently. As he had used him roughly, but as he had brought him up. And the fact of her being powerless to control him lent a pathetic force to a wish that would have been inoperative as an argument. So Jude gave no sign. He would not call upon Sue just yet. He had other reasons against doing so, when he had walked away. She seemed so dainty beside himself in his rough working jacket and moldy trousers, that he felt he was as yet unready to encounter her, as he had felt about Mr. Phillotson. And how possible it was that as he had inherited the antipathies of her family, and would scorn him, as far as a Christian could. Particularly when he had told her that unpleasant part of his history which had resulted in his becoming enchained to one of her own sex whom she would certainly not admire. Thus he kept watch over her, and liked to feel she was there. The consciousness of her living presence stimulated him. But she remained more or less an ideal character, about whose form he began to weave curious and fantastic daydreams. Between 2 and 3 weeks afterwards Jude was engaged with some more men, outside Crozier College in Old Time Street, in getting a block of worked freestone from a wagon across the pavement, before hoisting it to the parapet which they were repairing. standing in position, the head man said, "Spake when he heave. Heo!" And they heaved. All of a sudden, as he lifted, his cousin stood close to his elbow, pausing a moment on the bend of her foot till the obstructing object should have been removed. She looked right into his face with liquid, untranslatable eyes that combined, or seemed to him to combine, keenness with tenderness, and mystery with both their expression, as well as that of her lips, taking its life from some words just spoken to a companion, and being carried on into his face quite unconsciously. She no more observed his presence than that of the dust motes which his manipulations raised into the sunbeams. His closeness to her was so suggestive that he trembled, and turned his face away with a shy instinct to prevent her recognizing him, though as he had never once seen him, she could not possibly do so, and might very well never have heard even his name. He could perceive that, though she was a country girl at bottom, a latter girlhood of some years in London, and a womanhood here, had taken all rawness out of her. When she was gone he continued his work, reflecting on her. He had been so caught by her influence, that he had taken no count of her general mold and build. He remembered now that she was not a large figure, that she was light and slight, of the type dubbed elegant. That was about all he had seen. There was nothing statuesque in her, all was nervous motion. She was mobile, living, yet a painter might not have called her handsome or beautiful. But the much that she was surprised him. She was quite a long way removed from the rusticity that was his. How could one of his cross-grained, unfortunate, almost accursed stock, have contrived to reach this pitch of niceness? London had done it, he supposed. From this moment the emotion which had been accumulating in his breast as the bottled-up effect of solitude, and the poetized locality he dwelt in, insensibly began to precipitate itself on this half-visionary form, and he perceived that, whatever his obedient wish in a contrary direction, he would soon be unable to resist the desire to make himself known to her. He affected to think of her quite in a family way, since there were crushing reasons why he should not, and could not think of her in any other. The first reason was that he was married, and it would be wrong. The second was that they were cousins. It was not well for cousins to fall in love, even when circumstances seemed to favor the passion. The third, even were he free, in a family like his own where marriage usually meant a tragic sadness, marriage with a blood relation would duplicate the adverse conditions, and a tragic sadness might be intensified to a tragic horror. Therefore, again, he would have to think of Sue with only a relation's mutual interest in one belonging to him, regard her in a practical way as someone to be proud of, to talk and nod to, later on, to be invited to tea by, the emotion spent on her being rigorously that of a kinsman and well-wisher. So would she be to him a kindly star, an elevating power, a companion in Anglican worship, a tender friend? 3. But under the various deterrent influences Jude's instinct was to approach her timidly, and the next Sunday he went to the morning service in the Cathedral Church of Cardinal College, to gain a further view of her, for he had found that she frequently attended there. She did not come, and he awaited her in the afternoon, which was finer. He knew that, if she came at all, she would approach the building along the eastern side of the great green quadrangle from which it was accessible, and he stood in a corner while the bell was going. A few minutes before the hour for service she appeared as one of the figures walking along under the college walls, and at sight of her, he advanced up the side opposite, and followed her into the building, more than ever glad that he had not as yet revealed himself. To see her, and to be himself unseen and unknown, was enough for him at present. He lingered a while in the vestibule, and the service was some way advanced, when he was put into a seat. It was a lowering, mournful, still afternoon, when a religion of some sort seems a necessity to ordinary practical men, and not only a luxury of the emotional and leisured classes. In the dim light and the baffling glare of the clerestory windows, he could discern the opposite worshippers indistinctly only, but he saw that Sue was among them. He had not long discovered the exact seat that she occupied when the chanting of the 119th psalm in which the choir was engaged reached its second part, and quote corrigit, the organ changing to a pathetic Gregorian tune as the singers gave forth. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? It was the very question that was engaging Jude's attention at this moment. What a wicked, worthless fellow he had been to give vent as he had done to an animal passion for a woman, and allow it to lead to such disastrous consequences, then to think of putting an end to himself, then to go recklessly and get drunk. The great waves of pedal music tumbled round the choir, and, nursed on the supernatural as he had been, it is not wonderful that he could hardly believe that the psalm was not specially set by some regardful providence for this moment of his first entry into the solemn building. And yet it was the ordinary psalm for the 24th evening of the month. The girl for whom he was beginning to nourish an extraordinary tenderness was at this time ensnared by the same harmonies as those which floated into his ears, and the thought was a delight to him. She was probably a frequenter of this place, and, steeped body and soul in church sentiment as she must be by occupation and habit, had, no doubt, much in common with him. To an impressionable and lonely young man, the consciousness of having at last found anchorage for his thoughts, which promised to supply both social and spiritual possibilities, was like the dew of Hermon, and he remained throughout the service in a sustaining atmosphere of ecstasy. Though he was loth to suspect it, some people might have said to him that the atmosphere blew as distinctly from Cyprus as from Galilee. Jude waited till as he had left her seat and passed under the screen, before he himself moved. She did not look towards him, and by the time he reached the door she was halfway down the broad path. Being dressed up in his Sunday suit, he was inclined to follow her and reveal himself. But he was not quite ready, and, alas, ought he to do so with the kind of feeling that was awakening in him? For though it had seemed to have an ecclesiastical basis during the service, and he had persuaded himself that such was the case, he could not altogether be blind to the real nature of the magnetism. She was such a stranger that the kinship was affectation, and he said, "It can't be. I, a man with a wife, must not know her." Still, Sue was his own kin, and the fact of his having a wife, even though she was not in evidence in this hemisphere, might be a help in one sense. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.